Welcome everyone to All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 212, recording this on Saturday the 1st of April 2017. I'm Steve Litchfield. With me I have Rafe Blanford.
Yes, hello everybody. An unusual weekend recording this time. We're just trying to get caught up and make sure we get all the usual information across to you in this podcast format. We've got a few bits and pieces to walk through. I'm sure we'll have our usual diversions as well. But yes, thank you as ever for listening. Steve, what are we going to start with this week?
Well, I'm tempted to start with the creators update rolling out, but let's just save that for 1 minute. Go to something that was held over from last week's podcast, and it's an editorial I wrote called Material Matters, Who Needs a Case? And if you can bring that up in your browser, Rafe, my contention is that there's something horribly wrong with smartphone design in 2016, 2017. And you could even see it in some of the Windows phones we've had, some Windows 10 mobile devices, the Elite X3 maybe even, certainly the Alcatel Idol 4S with Windows 10. Even perhaps, this may be heresy, but things like the Lumia 1020, 1520, even going back as far as the 920, which are all kind of bar of soap shaped and pretty eminently droppable and best used in a case. And things have gone to an absolute extreme recently where we've seen everything really from £120 upwards in the smartphone world, sort of Android especially. Absolute massive Android phones coming out with these sort of teardrop, sleek, shiny aluminium unibodies. And even devices with oleophobic glass on the back as well as on the front. So we're going into a whole era of premium in quotes, smartphones, which are completely unusable unless you slap on a £5 case off eBay made out of tatty, cheap and garish plastic. So something is horribly wrong. That's my contention. And if you go back to things like that classic, I don't know, maybe even the Lumia 930, it had sort of slab sides. It was metal, it was premium, but it had something you could grip, something that didn't keep sliding out of your hand like a bar of soap. I think manufacturers are all getting it wrong in the name of style.
So I just want to ask you this, Steve. What is it that you object to so much? Is it the sort of materials that you then need to put a case on to keep it protected, or is it just about the fact it's not very easy to hold, it's sort of slippery material, or it's kind of form over function, or is it all of those?
It's both of those. What is the point in making it in the first place with it a form that you can't use in that form? It's like saying, okay, Rafe, here is your new Porsche sports car. But by the way, it's not allowed in that form on the UK roads. We're going to have to limit the speed to 60 miles an hour or 70 miles an hour. And by the way, we're going to have to coat it in a special, I don't know, waterproof coating to keep out the British rain. It makes a complete travesty of buying the Porsche in the first place. You might have bought a Ford Fiesta.
Yeah, it's interesting because I agree with you on this. There has been, it feels like, more of an emphasis on fashion. I think there's a very good reason for that. I think it's because smartphones, for a lot of people, are very personal devices and take a lot of their cues from the fashion industry. But also there's been a desire to differentiate because, we're basically talking about a slab of glass with something behind it. And yet the irony is that in following some of the fashion trends, we've seen a lot of very similar devices. And so it feels like we're sometimes trapped in a sea of sameness. I mean, I have particular loathing of having glass on both the front and the back of the device, yeah, because that seems particularly vulnerable. And if you do drop it, it is very, very likely to break. On the other hand, I would also say the overall quality of design and the robustness has improved markedly in the last few years. And I think that's been most apparent in the mid-tier devices, which used to be able to tell a mid-tier device by the fact you'd pick it up and it felt a bit cheap and nasty. I would contend now, once you get past the sort of £150, maybe £200 price point,
yeah,
it's harder to immediately tell. Now, there are clues if you know what to look for in things like rounded glass or, the higher resolution cameras. And there are a few things you can pick out. And it's very noticeable that the complexity of the design, something that's not always immediately apparent, obviously does tend to be there on the higher end devices. And things like the just announced S8 or any other recent flagships are good examples of that. And yet a lot of that complexity is hidden with simplicity. But there's been some particularly appalling examples really recently. I mean, HTC's sort of Ultra phone with a particularly shiny fingerprint magnet, and they're certainly not alone. And so that's definitely one part of it for me. I think perhaps I might suggest that Steve's a bit conservative in his smartphone design choices or desires, because there's a lot of people that do like to have them sort of shiny and use interesting materials. But there's definitely a balance to be drawn. I mean, you talked about cases with this, and actually I think this is kind of the interesting part of the editorial as well. You know, people spend a lot of money on these phones and then kind of hide the design away, yeah, to kind of, because they want to protect it and keep it safe because it's such a significant investment. I've actually sort of gone from having not really used cases much in the past to actually using them. Now, a lot of that is about the fact the phones have got thinner, and so when I put a case on it, it doesn't really feel any bigger than kind of what I was used to carrying around, and so it can kind of cross over that acceptable line for me. But I was going to ask you, Steve, do you use a case? I know you will with some phones, kind of for functional reasons, but would you also do it to protect it, and, you know, not just falls, but also sort of day-to-day scratches?
I am the exception that proves the rule, Rafe. Actually, I'm the exception that doesn't prove the rule, because I'm literally the exception. I'm one of the 1 in 1,000 people who still uses a belt holster, and therefore all phones basically live naked, because I use them I physically handle materials, but then they slide cowboy style straight into the holster, and then they're perfectly secure, I never forget them. I never leave the phone somewhere and wander off without it, and it's also perfectly protected and perfectly suspended, and yet because it looks uncool, no one else wants to go down that route. They all go down the sliding the phone in their pockets, then it gets scratched up, and then they put a case on it, then they can't feel the materials. I could rant about this for hours, Rafe.
Yeah, me too. And the thing is, that's interesting, I think, is they have got slippery, and there has been a lot of these metal designs. And what I always liked about, kind of actually started with the N9 and the Fabula design language, is actually by using those plastics, Nokia and subsequently Microsoft kind of did stand out from the crowd a bit. Actually, that's now become a lot more common on those kind of mid-tier devices. But actually, it was something that was a bit of a signature of the Lumia line, and I think everyone's got their favorite Nokia design. Yet now we're sort of seeing even more uniformity, and actually it was one of the things that was interesting about the new Nokia Android handsets at MWC. They didn't feel particularly distinctively Nokia. I mean, you could see the design heritage, but they were more glass and plastic, as we've seen in so many phones. But unfortunately, the kind of the market speaks for that, and it's driven it in that direction. That seems to be the popular thing. I myself actually use kind of flip cases on most phones, or kind of a kind of relatively minimal kind of either plastic or leather kind of case on the back of the device. And I usually mainly for reasons just to protect it if I do drop it, which I'm quite good at doing with phones, yeah, but also yeah, when it's just in the pocket with keys and everything else. And actually that's why the flip cases work well for me. But it seems to be quite a personal thing, and actually I'm prepared to spend a decent amount on a case if I think it's, you know, aesthetically quite pleasing. But of course, you don't actually appreciate the design that goes into some of the smartphones if it does live, yeah, in a case all the time. So it is a really interesting one. I mean, in terms of materials, it still feels like there's room for improvement. And I think we show so much more interest in it now because, as I say, the phones have become rather uniform. I mean, there's a couple of things that caught my attention recently. We're starting to see the use of carbon fiber and Kevlar. And actually, I saw a phone in Barcelona. It was basically the thinnest phone. They claimed it was the thinnest phone in the world. It was certainly about 2/3 of the thickness of an iPhone. So yeah, they were doing pretty well. It was made out of carbon fiber and Kevlar, and it was called the Carbon Phone. It was also, not surprisingly, very light as well, and quite remarkable as a device. And so I kind of go, okay, there is actually still room to improve on things there. But then it's not just about the materials, it's what you then do with them. And I noticed that Alcatel produced a mid-tier Android phone that was otherwise unremarkable, but had light-up LEDs on the back. And, you know, obviously when you get an incoming call, you're playing a game or music, it can light up. And I thought that was an interesting approach. And I know in the past, Steve, we've talked about phones that enable you to customize the cabin in some way. And we sort of thought about e-ink and sort of the technologies that might that happen. There's definitely still room for this, but you look at the recent flagships and there is very little to choose between them in some ways. You know, at first glance, I do think that probably does a bit of a disservice to the design. I mean, if you look at the way something like the LG G6 or the Samsung S8, or, you know, actually some of the recent Windows phones as well, you know, the HTC the HP Elite X3, I should say. Actually, they're quite intricate in the way they're constructed, but perhaps not as much appreciation for that. I mean, if you're going to choose a material, if you were designing your ideal phone, what would it have, Steve?
I'm tempted to say a metal chassis and leather on the back, but then I'm kind of into leather and textured materials, which offer grip. And I actually want to put it to you, Rafe, that I take on board what you've just said, and you admire the design of the iPhones and the recent Android devices. But go back 2 years to the Lumia 930. Now imagine a 930 in your hand. Maybe you've even got one in a drawer to hand. I know that. Let's go all out. Let's do the black and gold version. So you've got like a gold painted or gold finished aluminium chassis, you've got curved 2.5D glass on the front, you've got a cosmetic back which you can have any color you want, it feels just the right size in the hand, you've got the aluminium is not teardrop shaped, it's slab sided with rounded edges, so you've got a really solid grippy area that your fingers can attach to the phone. Is that not almost the perfect form factor and the perfect materials? And by having these ultra thin edges to phones, that's what makes them droppable.
I think you're probably right. I mean, I'm on record as saying the Lumia 830 is probably one of my favourite phones, and it wasn't just sort of the oval bits of it. Actually, the design, and basically, as you say, that metal, almost boxy design around the outside, and then the switchable covers on the back, and the sort of use of plastics. And actually, it doesn't have to be plastics. You could put metal in there if that's what you wanted. It was definitely a very functional design. It worked really well for me, but I can equally well see when you put it up against something like the iPhone with its kind of more chamfered edges, the rounded, it looks more beautiful. I mean, the 830, and I think, you know, you saw this actually with the 950 in particular, and to a certain extent the 930 and the 830 as well, just a little bit utilitarian in the design. I mean, if we sort of wind things back a bit and talk about something like the Nokia C7, which was a Symbian device, which probably still remains one of my favorite designs. You know, that had very rounded edges and it felt very elegant. And it's just the fact that, you know, that what people want isn't really necessarily the functional design. They like a bit of beauty. But that's true of a lot of products. And, you know, as grumpy old men, you tend to go, oh, I just want it to do the job and be rational about it. But unfortunately, people very rarely are. Yeah, and that very much extends to the smartphone design as well. And, you know, actually, beauty is an important thing because, you know, holding an object that you're using every day, and if it's sort of, it does just fit into the hand elegantly. And yes, it might be a bit slippery and easy to drop. But, you know, I talk in the past about the caressability of phones, and that remains a really important factor for me. And actually, it's one of the things that I think is notable about all of the high-end smartphones. That actually is often the thing that makes them stand out from you know, the mid-tier phones. They just have that little bit of extra finesse, that extra finishing, you know, it just extra quality. And it might be the edges slightly tighter, you know, everything just, it's kind of an X factor, hard to put your finger on, but actually that is important. And of course, touch is such an important sense. Having that in your hand every day is absolutely vital. And it is a lot of the appeal of these devices. Of course, that's all ruined when you put a case on it, as a lot of people do. It's an interesting topic, and actually we should probably come back to material science as a separate one, because there's, you know, been various things on that. I mean, all of them around different coatings, basically, over, as you say, aluminium or other metal materials, not so much in the kind of polycarbonate space recently, but there's always going to be room for improvement, and, you know, I would love to see a bit more variety later on this year.
So you mentioned beauty there, and I don't want to prolong this topic too much, so I'll just finish here, but that Lumia 930, especially in black and gold with the gorgeous screen, and as I mentioned, the 2.5D glass, the metal chassis, the 930 was a genuinely beautiful phone. It was horribly flawed in terms of overheating and arguably not enough RAM and no glance screen, all of that, but it was a beautiful phone. And I don't think you can get by saying the modern design for teardropped, slippery, thin-edged phones is down to beauty. There have been some beautiful designs in the past. I was even clearing out my office earlier, Rafe, and I came across the box and the phone, the Nokia N86, which I think was 2008 2009. I know that was a non-touched numeric slider, but that was you can't argue that was a centimeter thick, for goodness sake.
Yeah, you're right. And actually, the other thing that I particularly about those older phones, and I would also argue some of the Lumia designs, is there was a bit more thought given to the union between hardware and software. And you talked about the kind of the black and white 9.30 and there's 8.30 versions as well, with the kind of the start screen on Windows Phone with the big blocks and the kind of solid use of colors, it just felt like a slightly better fit, where a lot of the current flagships, you know, on Android and to an extent, I guess, the iPhone as well, it's sort of the hardware design is trying to get out of the way of the software. It's just trying to be as slim and as elegant as possible. And there isn't quite that echo that I seem to recall in earlier devices. Now, maybe that's a bit of nostalgia and rose-tinted glasses, but it's one of the things I did appreciate about Nokia. They did attempt to sort of do a join between the two, and there were things like the, I think it was the N73 and some of the N79 as well, that had covers that you could put on that would then change the theme of the phone. And I'm not suggesting that's the way ahead, but it was just the fact that there was a little bit more consideration how you could put hardware design into software design. And, you know, obviously that theme thing kind of remains something that you still see at times, but it just doesn't feel like it's an in-depth part of the design process. And that's probably a reflection also of the fact that, obviously, with the exception of Apple, you know, they're not vertically integrated. You know, they're taking the Google software. They may be applying a skin to it, but it's, you know, your continuous iteration of design and devices. And so having a device or even a family device that will last a while is not a good thing, because actually the market thrives on, you know, seeing something a little bit different. You know, they actually want one device to stand separate from another. Whereas in the past, it did feel like there was a bit more of a design heritage, almost a design language that, you know, was over and above any one individual phone. You know, it was kind of transported from one device to the next. And I think that's actually where a lot of the fondness from Nokia design, you know, whether it's the Nokia smile or the corners, you know, it was always instantly recognizable as a Nokia device. And I think we've lost some of that. And that's definitely because of the, you know, sea of sameness. It's actually quite hard to think up ways you can differentiate things or, you know, have variations when, you know, basically the very fixed form factor. But yeah, just a sigh of nostalgia for the years gone by, Steve.
Let's move on swiftly. I know a lot of people did agree with me though on that post. 80 comments and rising on that Material Matters editorial, so do look at that. We'll put all the links to the stories we talk about in this podcast in the show notes. But just moving on, the Creators Update, aka Redstone 2, we've got a date for it, Rafe, in terms of official rollout to production phones will start on April the 25th, although I should emphasise that the rollout starting means that a period of a couple of months at least while all the different variants and phone models get it. In the desktop world, Rafe, you've got the situation whereby Microsoft can't that easily differentiate generic PCA from generic PCB, and so it's harder for them to stagger a particular update rolling out. In the phone world, it's an absolute dog. Every single phone reports itself with an RM, in Nokia's case, an RM model number, and the different other manufacturers have their own schema. But essentially, every phone tells the operating system and anybody who wants to know on the internet exactly what model of phone it is and what network variant, all of that, and its current OS version. So Microsoft can be incredibly choosy about how they actually do this rollout. And my gut feel is that the 950, 950 XL and 650 will all get it on April 25th, production devices, and everything else will have to wait in the queue while Microsoft sort of sifts through the feedback and support questions and fixes last-minute issues. But at least something's happening, and of course I should emphasise the usual thing, that if you're in any way in a hurry, just go on to the release preview ring and you'll get it within a couple of days of recording this podcast. And if you're in a really, 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 really big hurry, then you'll have had it weeks or months ago via the fast and slow ring. So I don't think anyone's really waiting with bated breath for this, Rafe, but it's good to see that this new super slick, smoother version of Windows 10 Mobile is now going to be heading out to production devices, and not too much later after April the 25th.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of people will already have this in one form or another, but obviously there's a difference when it's rolling out to customers who, you know, basically don't worry too much about the software that's running on their phone. Of course, then there's a question of whether they choose to go through with the update or not. But yes, I'm sure you're absolutely right. It'll be the most recent devices will get this first. And you're right to point out that there's kind of much more fixed models and even fixed families of hardware in terms of, you know, things that are out there. But, you know, although there are quite a few variations within any product, because, you know, each different market version has a different kind of SKU, actually the reality is there's probably only about five or six different hardware variations to a great extent now, actually, once you look into it a bit more, of course, it does vary a bit more than that by the time you get down to camera module level and everything like that. But certainly compared to the PC world, everything's a lot more standardized. And yes, it will take a few months to roll out. I would suggest they will probably also choose to stagger some of the countries that it rolls out to as well. They'll probably want to trial it in a few places just to make sure everything's running smoothly, because you never know, there may be one thing that they haven't got quite right. Even with all these, you know, fast ring, slow ring release previews, it's always better to be safe than sorry, because of course if they dumped it on everyone at the same time and it's something went wrong, that's going to be a lot worse than if you just tested it with a few people. So just the advice for people, if they do want to get ready for this, or you know, want to get on the thing, I mean, it'll be the usual thing of upgrading to Windows 10 Mobile using the upgrade advisor. After the update cycle, you will see that there'll be an anniversary update available. And if you want to get that earlier, you go into the Insiders program. I mean, we've documented that well on the site. In fact, I think you've got this on the story. So if people want to see how to do it, they can go and look at it there. I think we talked last time about what the things in this Redstone 2 or this Creators update. So you can probably go and refer to that. We'll also make sure we link to the details on the site. Probably worth saying that it's also part of a wider Windows update that's going to be rolling out, I believe, on April the 11th, so less than 2 weeks away now. And obviously that's bringing a whole bunch of updates to kind of desktop Windows as well.
People often point out, Rafe, and you don't need to reply to this, but that how come Apple can roll out their operating system to every single iPhone in the world on one particular day, whereas everybody else struggles? And it's simply because Apple completely controls the model. It's the only person making, only manufacturer making the devices. Therefore, it absolutely knows that update A will work on device B because it's got them both in hand. Even in the Windows 10 Mobile and Windows Phone world, okay, there's not as many models as there are in the Android world by a long, long stretch. But there's still an awful lot of variation in terms of dual SIM, single SIM, and bands and regions and variations. So that's why Apple can do it. Hopefully Microsoft won't take too long. I think perhaps weeks rather than months in this case. Okay, have you heard of DeX, Rafe? Does that make sense to you? Because I've got an editorial up saying Samsung DeX is not Continuum. Would you like me to elaborate?
Well, I do know what Samsung DeX is, and I sort of understand that it's an experience that kind of gives you a desktop from your smartphone, but you're saying it's obviously not measuring up to Continuum in quite the same way. So I know Samsung's effectively done a little bit of tweaking to make this happen, but of course they don't control the Google platform, so I'm rather imagining it's not that full experience of kind of one Windows everywhere.
Yeah, I think people are seeing this and they think it's just Samsung's answer to Continuum. And of course, it looks at first glance to be doing the same job. You dock your phone and your phone then powers a desktop-like experience. But there is a fundamental difference that I think most tech commentators are completely missing, and is that all Samsung's doing is upscaling its Android applications, and not even all the applications on the phone, just tightly controlled core Android stuff and Samsung's own and Microsoft's and Adobe's, which admittedly is a fair number of applications, but you certainly can't take generic Android App A and expect it to run properly in this multi-windowed desktop-like experience. Whereas on the Continuum side with Windows 10, it is a genuine one operating system across all screen sizes, across all devices. It's genuinely the same applications. Let's take an example. OneCast, the podcatcher UWP app that we've covered in the past. I can run that on my Windows 10 mobile phone. I can plug it on my 950. I can plug it into a Continuum dock, and that application scales itself up, runs very happily in the Continuum display. I then decide to install exactly the same application, exactly the same binary, to the Windows 10 store on my Windows 10 laptop or a desktop, or even, heaven forbid, an Xbox games console. It's exactly the same application. So I think Samsung here are actually on a sticky wicket, because they're trying to emulate something without going the whole hog. This is not one operating system that's transcending up the desktop. It's just a phone pretending to be a desktop, and it is literally pretending. And their biggest problem, as I see it, is the fact that most Galaxy S8 owners will be consumers. Just the Joe Blogs in the high street, and they will love their S8. It's a jolly fine phone, I'm sure it is. But they're not going to want to convert that phone into a desktop. They're not going to want to do any of the things that Samsung show in the promo videos for this DeX system. Microsoft has come at it via an elegant system where one OS ad does genuinely scale all the different form factors. They've done it properly, and Microsoft for better or for worse, has been pitching it at businesses, at enterprise organizations, people who genuinely might actually have a use case for this. Whereas I think the Samsung DeX, I think it's going to be dead in the water.
I think that may be a little bit too harsh in the sense that I still think there's utility to being able to do this. But I think, I mean, in some ways, people will accuse us of, I think, splitting hairs, but there is a much greater maturity and much greater ambition to what Continuum does. I mean, the way I actually think about this is DeX effectively is turning off the smartphone screen, because actually you can't use the two screens at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's basically saying to the phone, right, you've got a bigger screen to cope with now. And actually one of the nice things about Android 7 is that it does have that support for effectively, it's not necessarily high resolution screens, but I would actually say it's the physical size that's important here. I mean, obviously there's some crossover here with Android and the tablet form factor, but being able to run multiple windows and sort of it's much more of a desktop metaphor than smartphone and tablet. But it's actually really those still those same Android applications, and they have to sort of be written to take advantage of that. And you've talked about the Samsung one and some of the partner applications that have been bought into that. So I do think this is further ahead than sort of some of the other approaches we've seen in the past from Motorola with something like the Atrix, or, you know, some of the phones which effectively run another version of an operating system and just share data between them. And we've seen various approaches that use various variants of Linux to do that. This is actually Android running on the bigger screen. But Android isn't engineered in quite the same way as the Windows Continuum experience, because actually what Windows does and has a lot of heritage from the desktop, meaning that's obviously where Microsoft is strongest. And so it feels like that's where they've, you know, really set the bar quite high. I mean, the thing I would say is that there are certain elements of this, you know, particularly when you look at Android 7 with the seamlessness of the setup and also that multi-window support, is actually pretty elegant. They've done a good job on it. But you're right to say that there's a fundamental sort of philosophy difference between the two. Yeah. And, you know, the thing about Continuum, if it was just about projecting some of the core things, that core apps that are on the phone, I think that would be one thing. But actually the ambition is obviously for it to be much wider, and those universal Windows apps, they're really important part of this equation, because as you say, you can run them on the desktop. It, you know, that's kind of what's missing from the DeX part from a consumer mindset. And actually that speaks to the fundamental technical difference as well. And so, you know, it, at first glance, you look at it and actually go, oh, this is pretty impressive. But I think we've seen this sort of thing before. And I'm yet to be convinced that sort of a simple upscaling, which is really what's going on here, is good enough, because we've been very, very critical of Continuum on both the 950 and on the HP Elite X3 for not really measuring up to the promise of the vision and not being a great experience when you actually try and use it in the real world. Now, it's improved markedly in the updates to Windows 10 Mobile, and we expect it, well, we know it's improved again in kind of Redstone 2, but we've been upfront in saying there's still more work to do. I think much the same will apply to DeX. The issue here is that there's actually two parties involved. There's Google as the developer of Android, and then Samsung kind of putting stuff over and above that. And I just don't think the same resources or the same philosophy is quite being applied. Samsung are doing this because they want to differentiate themselves from the competition, and I applaud them for that. You know, everyone's looking for a unique selling point. And Samsung are breaking new ground. I think you recognize that, but I think it will face exactly the same problems that Continuum did early on, with the added problem that actually I don't think the vision is so complete, and the technical solution is far less complete as well.
I think you're absolutely right. We must cover a listener letter, because we've had this hanging around for a couple of weeks, and poor old Keith Bartlett sent it in and hasn't had a reply yet, but we're going to reply now. Keith says, in the past, we the consumers have got annoyed when we haven't received updates to devices. For example, when Windows Phone 7 was not upgradable to Windows Phone 8 because of hardware constraints, yet the Lumia 900 had only just been announced and was already obsolete. And I believe I said, Rafe, that the Lumia 900 was a turkey when it came out. Absolute. Keith says, so perhaps Microsoft are right not to release a new flagship Lumia 960 or whatever this year, as it wouldn't then be able to receive Windows 10 on ARM when that comes out. Or should they? And and will be obsolete? Or should they have released a phone to keep consumers happy and done another 900 series? Your thoughts welcome. And before you reply, Rafe, I've heard on the grapevine, this is just a rumour, just consider this little bird tweeting my ear, that there may well be a successor to the 950 coming out later this year as a kind of stopgap, as a test bed for running Redstone 3, i.e. a first-party device that would be able to run Redstone 3 in the absence of any particular manufacturer devices. I think that's plausible. I haven't had anything concrete, and certainly there are no leaked photos or anything, but I think Microsoft could have something up its sleeve before the rumoured, quote, Surface phone, which I think is probably a year away. I think there might just be something in between as a stopgap. What do you think?
Well, it would certainly make sense, because they need to keep some momentum going in the hardware space and actually keep current with the hardware as well. And as you say, even if you kind of see it as a testing device to kind of keep things going. I mean, the one thing I'll say about all of this, it's interesting to note that the word consumer was used in here. And I think it's fair to say that the Windows 10 mobile ecosystem as a whole has kind of switched away from mass market consumers. I mean, Microsoft themselves said that, we've talked about it. And so actually measuring in those terms, keeping consumers happy, that's probably not their priority.
Enthusiasts happy.
keeping enthusiasts happy, yeah, that's fair enough. And actually, and what you were talking about there, kind of the testers, or keeping a little bit of momentum in the market. I mean, there's no question that it's a kind of a minority platform, and everyone who talks to me about it goes, oh, is that still going? Isn't it dead? Here we go again. And we've had that conversation plenty of times. Microsoft is clearly continuing to still make investments in there. I mean, that is obvious from the pace of updates that's coming on the software side. I think at this point, it probably wouldn't make a lot of difference if they did a Lumia 900-like device. But I would have thought that it would be possible to kind of look at the hardware now, and I'm particularly thinking something like the Snapdragon 820 and go, that's the sort of thing that might be capable of running this Windows 10 on ARM. And so they could release a phone around that, and that would be the thing that would then be upgradable. But kind of to answer Keith's question directly, I don't think they're going to release an intermediary one that isn't able to sort of get ready for the future, just because they haven't got the resources to launch a load of phones that then sort of become not dead on arrival, but dead on 12 months. I mean, just as the 950 has clearly been expected to kind of hold things up for, a year, 2 years, maybe even longer than that, we'll have to wait and see. So I don't think they're just going to release one to keep consumers happy. And I suppose that's, as Keith suggests, actually, maybe that's not such a bad thing given all the turkeys we've had in the past. I mean, it does feel like this is a bit of an inside the bubble argument, because honestly, I don't think a lot of people who buy the phones care all that much about software updates. The ones that do, of course, are very vocal, very voluble. We talk about it, we complain about it. But then I sort of remind myself that there are tens of millions of very happy users out there who might have the odd twinge about not getting a software update and sort of be complaining about not getting what they expect. But actually, that's the whole point. It's about expectations. And for a lot of people, they buy the phone, they expect it to do what they, the thing they bought it for out of the box. And there's a little bit of expectation now of software updates, but not an altogether massive amount of surprise when it doesn't quite work. And, Android's been a laggard in that sense. Actually, the expectations more maybe come from the iPhone world. And, you get a couple of updates, but, how long does that last? How long do people expect to get those? I mean, I've certainly come across friends and family with devices that are a couple of years old and they just haven't bothered to update to the latest software. They may have been nudged about it a few times by the system, but ultimately they said, yeah, it's fine. Come across plenty of Windows phone users who are still on 8.1, despite the fact that 10 is available to them. And we've actually been through a couple of updates now and just about to get another one as well. So I hesitate to say it, but as I say, inside the bubble argument, and so it doesn't matter. But yes, I don't expect to sort of see a turkey of a phone. But I think you're right, Steve, there might be something in between, if only to sort of allow that bit of momentum for the hardware ecosystem. And if Microsoft don't do it themselves, I wouldn't be surprised to see a partner do it, and then that gets used extensively for testing purposes, both internally and externally.
Yeah, I mean, if they are testing Redstone 3, which will presumably need a bit more RAM, and because it will have some new Project Neon has been something that's been widely leaked as a new graphical system which may make its way onto phones as well. But also, then, are they going to be testing Windows 10 on ARM, i.e. full Windows 10 on smartphones or phablets? There's something like a 960 XL, basically taking the current design, which is already done and dusted, just restarting manufacturing, but with 4 gigabytes of RAM and a Snapdragon 835, perhaps. That would make a lot of sense. There would be very, very little R&D concerned. They don't have to do a huge marketing spend because they're basically just selling to testers, professionals, and enthusiasts. And people, certainly the people listening to this show, would be overjoyed to see such a beast because it would give the 950 XL, you know, form factor and ethos a whole new lease of life.
Yeah, and I still come across quite a few Windows phone users just out and about who are very happy with the device and go, "Oh, do you think there's going to be a new one coming out soon?" I said, "Well, actually, you haven't heard anything recently. There's plenty of rumours around it." So there's still a healthy appetite for that. It's probably just fair to say there's a few less people waiting for it than in the past with some of the Nokia flagships. And it's been particularly bad in one sense because there's been a long wait. I mean, even if you count the HP Elite X3, which we should, I don't think it's really quite right to count that as a consumer device, and therefore you have to really go back to the 950 and the 950 XL. And I know there's the Alcatel versions and some of the smaller manufacturers, but people are really expecting what I guess we should call a first-party piece of hardware. And if the Surface Phone really is, you know, another 12 months off, it does feel like they need to do something in the next 6 months. Maybe not. I mean, I think it's probably a bit of wishful thinking on both our parts.
Yeah. And what's wrong with that? This is the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast, after all, and we're nearing the end of the show. I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you very much for listening. We'll have the next show out in about a week and a half. I know Rafe's taking a bit of time off next week. I shall try and do likewise if I can, if the sun comes out in the UK, and then we'll see you in about a week and a half's time. Bye for now.
Yeah, and it's goodbye from me as well. We've finally arrived in April, so at least in the Northern Hemisphere, we're starting to look to the lovely part of spring and then the summer to come. And we will, of course, be continuing our podcast coverage. So please tune in next time. And thanks for listening this time.